925-KYHY.com. Just tell me how you think I'm doing. If you're any guests you want to hear, I'll try to get them. And also, for you Burbank local people, Cooper's Angels, this Friday night, 11:30 at Flappers Comedy Club in the Yoo-Hoo Room. $5 to get in. Happy hour throughout the show. I had the very funny Kathy Laban, who was a guest on a few weeks ago, who's been on The Tonight Show like 10 times. She's had her own HBO special. Come out. And you know what? The fifth emailer, I will put your names at the door so you won't have to pay. So come out to see that show. And we got a great show today. I got to tell you, I ran into this guy the other day. I haven't seen him for a while. And now you've heard me. Well, you know, my Mark Belsman was on the show. And Mark was my co-star in this wonderful movie that Laz directed. Remember, I've talked about Killer Drag Queens on Dope, where we talked about, it was just a crazy set. It was my first movie. And I got to tell you, well, me and Laz will talk about it. But he's a good friend, and I haven't seen him. It was the day after New Year's. I was going to watch football, and I looked across the bar, and I saw Laz. And you know, I like my bars, so it was always good to see him. So we have Laz Sarek. How you doing, Laz?
Great.
It's funny, people. I got to tell you, for the last few years, I just told him in the lobby, I thought his name was Laz Sakic, but it's Sarek, and yes. I don't know why. I think just it's crazy because when we met through Clark Weaver.
That's right. No relation to Pat Sakic, though.
Exactly. It's you know, it's funny. It's Clark was a guy we knew, and Clark was in a comedy troupe of mine called the Bitter Optimists. And Laz, you came to a few of the shows, and I remember you were doing this movie, and so you sat there, and I remember you told Clark to get in touch with me. And now, people, this is a time before there was like tons of email and cell phone, like there was no Facebook, there was none of that. So basically, I think he sent like a Homer pitch into my house, and he said you wanted me to audition for the movie because you'd see me and you liked me,
right?
And I still remember going to the audition, and it was at your brother's apartment.
Yes,
right over in like Hollywood, West Hollywood
area.
It
had a very porno feel to it.
Yes, exactly.
Porno audition.
I know. I walked
feel,
in the music's playing. It's like, wah, wah. I'm like, what the hell is this? And I remember because I was up for a role as a thug. I was Anthony, or I was Tony.
Right.
And what's funny was I didn't know it was people. I had never been in a movie. I was. My background was doing stand-up and being on stage, you know, just before I even did the radio. I just, you know, I didn't know what to do. And I get to the place, and there's like two big Guido dudes out front, and they go, hey, what are you auditioning for? And I'm like, I'm auditioning for the part of So Am I. I'm like, oh, great. Like, I have a chance in hell of getting this. And you were very good. You were very good with me. And I came in, and I read, and I remember you said to me, okay, Steve, can you just be more yourself like you were in a comedy show? I'm like, oh, like a Nebuchadnezzar Jew. That's what you want. You want a Nebuchadnezzar Jew? So, how did you, first of all, Laz is also, he's one of the producers and writers of Big Time Rush. And he's with Ned's Declassified School Survival Guide. And Johnny Test, you're a writer for it?
Right.
And now, what is Johnny Test about? Because I don't really watch Cartoon Network. I watch Nick because I like SpongeBob, but I don't really watch it. What is the whole concept of Johnny Test?
Another great show created by Scott Fellows, a buddy that keeps putting food on my table. And it's about a young kid whose two sisters are genius scientists. And they keep on doing experiments on him.
Okay. So it's animated.
Yes.
So, okay. Here's something I always wonder because George Doty IV, who you said you've met, he wrote for iCarly and
right.
A few of those things. How do you? Well, you have kids, so it might be easier. But how do you, as a writer, how do you sit there and? I mean, you're basically writing for a demographic. I mean, I know the kids may watch it with their parents, but what's the Johnny Test demographic?
I would say, you know, boys probably like 7 to 10, 7 to 11, something like that. I mean, and I'm being, you know, very general. I mean, the demographics for these shows are so damn specific. It's like 7 to 9, 9 to 11, you know.
Right.
But I would say, you know, boys generally 7 to 12 in that area.
So how do you, as a writer, because you're like, I mean, I write, and first of all, it's not only writing comedy is hard enough anyway. I mean, it's not. I mean, you're a good comedy writer. You know, it's not easy. It's not like people can just wake up and write comedy.
Right.
You know, we have to be a little skewed and demented
yes,
in the mind.
Yes.
And for me, though, it's like, okay, I can write a screenplay or I can write comedy that goes out to my peers. Or, I mean, if I play in front of, you know, 21 or 22-year-olds sometimes, then I'll get some of my references. I don't care because that's where my act focuses around. I'm the king of the 80s sitcom references. But for you, you're actually writing to someone who's like 7 or 8 or 9, and it has to be funny because it is a comedy, I'm guessing.
Yes.
So how do you like when you guys go into the writer room, do you sit there and, I mean, you can't think back because we're older, we can't think back to when we're kids and sense of humor is different. What's the process for that?
You know, there's a lot of different process. I can tell you one right off the bat is you have a bunch of writers working in a room and you pull out a joke for this scene. That is the raunchiest HBO, you know, sex-filled joke you could possibly think of, and you all laugh your ass off about it. But then you stop and you say, hey, you know, the joke was fine. If we take out the bad words, maybe put in some kid words, we could bring it down to their level. And that's how a lot of time the genesis of it is. You start out with a, you know, R-rated raunchy joke.
Okay.
And then you trim out the R rating and bring it down. And before you know it, you have it down at a kid's level. Granted, to an adult, it's not as funny as the R-rated version you just told.
Right, right.
But to a kid, it's great.
Now, what happens now? Who comes up with the story ideas? Is it the guy who created it, or is it a group effort? Or
it goes back and forth. Overall, the guy who created it will come up to the story. You know, Johnny turns into Frankenstein or whatever, and then how the story gets there, that's a creative process. Then we all, you know, pitch it around and stuff. It's more, the cartoon is less writer's room. That's more sitting in your room in your underwear and writing.
Okay.
Big Time Rush is quote-unquote real writing. We're in the room, we have the writers, you know, we got the board up, we're telling stories and stuff. That's really more along the sitcom level of writing that you're talking about.
Okay, so for the Johnny Test, when you write an episode, how long till it actually appears? Because I know there's an animation process.
Yeah, I'm kind of guessing 6 months. I mean, the animation, I mean, I'm not dissing the show in any way, but it's crude animation. You know, this is not Walt Disney animation.
Right,
so.
Right.
It's all, you know, the flash stuff from the computer, and they whip it out fairly quickly. It's not too big a deal.
Okay, cool. So now you're writing for them now, but now your first writing gig, your breadwinner was it Nez the Classified?
Yeah, that was my first like a WGA show, residuals, you know, writer's room, the whole nine yards. That was and I mean working on I've been in this town like, you know, 20 whatever.
Where are you from originally?
Born in New York, raised in New Jersey.
Okay, where in New Jersey?
Sayreville, New Jersey, home of Bon Jovi.
I didn't know you're from New Jersey. I forgot because I'm from Cherry Hill.
Yeah, but it's my home of Bon Jovi, Greg Evigan, and the gay kid from Who's the Boss was also from Sayreville.
Danny Pintoro. Now it's funny because what was a club in Sayreville? Benet Cafe?
No. Oh, yeah, Club Benet.
Club Benet, Bon Jovi's player, yes.
I used to see a lot of great people there, yeah.
Now, how old were you moved out here? How old were you when you lived in New Jersey?
I lived in New Jersey from 3 to 18, and then 18 I moved back into the city, lived there till around 28.
You lived in the city? Okay,
yeah,
so you
came out to California.
Okay, so now back then, back in Jersey, you know, back in the days, baby, a little Springsteen, a little Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes, did you know you wanted to write, or what was your goal when you got out of high school or college or whatever? Because like me, I didn't get into comedy. I got into comedy when I got out of college. I mean, I got a degree, and then I took a learning arts class, and I started it. What was your focus? I mean, did you always know you would be able to write comedy, or?
No, I mean, I wanted to be a director, but that's all I said was I want to be a director. And I didn't realize, now I look back on it, realize that I used to sit around 13, 14, 12 and tell these stories in my head and make up these scenarios, what would be said and done. And I realize now that I was writing.
Right, yeah.
I just wasn't actually typing it or putting it on paper. I was just stream of consciousness.
Right.
So I thought I'd be a director, and then I'm about to go to college, and my best friend's stoner cousin says to me, how can you say you want to be a director? Spielberg was directing at 13. What the hell have you done? And I stopped and I was like, damn, you're right. I haven't done anything but say I want to be a director.
Right, right, right.
So I totally flipped out and said, I'm going into marketing. It's the most creative field in business. And I go into marketing. I'm working at Showtime Networks in New York marketing. I meet Scott Fellows, who created Johnny Test, Ned's a Classified, Big Time Rush. And this sounds very pompous. I don't want to sound too douchey, but he's after knowing me for about a year, he goes, "You're one of the funniest guys I've ever met."
I know. Oh, no, that's not douchey. I hear that all the time. But people know that. It's not. You know what it is? Because you're sort of like me. You're sort of. I mean, I'll talk and talk on the radio, and if I know you, I'll talk. But if you don't know someone, I'm not like the guy. Hey, look at me! I got a lampshade on my head. I'm an asshole. I'm an asshole. Woo! Which I've been to many parties. I've never seen a guy with a lampshade.
Right.
On his head. But no, that's the thing. But it's a certain thing. Creative people know, and it's like when you do go to a party, you'll sit there and it's like being the new guy at work. You don't want to be the guy, hey, my old job, and everyone's like, we hate you. You just sit there and you're mellow. But then you write, you direct, so you're an observer. So you sit there and you go, all right, this guy seems cool. Then you'll start up a conversation.
Right.
Then you guys will be in the corner, maybe four of you, just laughing your asses off.
Yes.
And then, I mean, that happened to me when I used to work. Someone's like, oh my God, you're pretty funny. I go, yeah. And they go, well, people said you were always funny, but you never talked to me. And I thought you were like a jerk. I'm like, well, I'm not going to go out of my way. I don't want to go out of my way to be funny. And I think it's also, it's a... why should we waste our funniness? I mean, it's sort of arrogant, but it's like, if I don't know you, why am I going to waste my funniness? And what if you don't think it's funny and you think I am a douche?
Right, right.
So Scott said you were... this was years ago.
This is, yeah.
New York.
Like 20 years ago. Scott says, you're one of the funniest people I've ever met. There was some short-lived sitcom on ABC. Forget the name. It was some spoof on reality TV. On the TV show Cops. I think it was called Arrested Development. Arrested Development, I think, was the name of the show. Not Arrested Behavior, which I know.
Arrested Development was the show with Jason Bateman. Maybe this was called Arrested Behavior.
Sorry, something else.
It's not listed on your credits.
Never, it was on the air for probably five episodes. But anyway, Scott knows a producer on the show and says, hey, let's write a script together.
Okay.
I never written anything in my life. I got so excited, I went home that weekend and wrote the whole script myself.
Right.
He read it, loved it. By that time, the show had already been canceled, but that was the spark.
But you got something on paper, and that's the old thing.
Exactly.
It's I went back and read one of my first screenplays, and this is back on like years ago, on the brother thing that had a little disc. And I look at it now, and I go, God, this is a piece of crap. But when I finished it, it was like the greatest feeling ever. I'm like, yeah, I'm getting an Oscar for this thing about a guy who meets a girl in his dream. Woo! But it's the thing, you get that, I mean, you're right, it's a spark.
It's a
like,
spark,
I always say, when I got out of comedy for a long time, and like when you saw me, I was very funny in that show. But I got out of it for certain reasons or whatever. And then when I got back into it, I was like, wow, you know, the spark was back. And then now, because I came back as someone who had done comedy for a while, like young comics were like, oh, who's this, you know, older guy, blah, blah, blah. But then they see my act and they're like, wow. And it's like, yeah, you know,
right.
And so you can mentor people. So you do this. You do this for us, Scott, fellows. You do this show. So that's in what year? That's in New York.
That's in New York. And like I said, it never got produced. I just wrote the script, showed it to them. But that got the spark. A year later, I was out of New Jersey, moved to California. And for a couple of years, worked like the dirt jobs.
Like a PA or just...
Not even a PA. I was doing telesurveying.
For a company?
For this. I forget the name of the company, but they are the largest company to get track movie ratings. And by that, I mean like they'll tell you what the projected box office is for that weekend. I would call people and say, do you want to see this movie very much? Not so much?
Okay, gotcha.
That kind of thing.
You know what's weird? You might know this because you're more into the that end than me, a different side of the camera. Why is it that those guys, like when you go to the AMC 18, when they have that slip, do you want to go see a movie for free?
Right.
They ask if you're in the entertainment business.
Right.
And if you are, like, you can't go.
Right.
Like, what am I, a leper? I mean, seriously, why is that? I mean, I would want to see if entertainment people thought it was interesting, because an entertainment person is a harder nut to crack than, as we call them, civilians and everyday persons. So it's always like, I feel discriminated.
You're thinking too idealistic. Imagine this. We're in a small town. Imagine you got a film coming up by Paramount, and just by random luck, you hit four Paramount people in your little focus group, and they're like, this is the greatest film ever.
That makes sense.
That,
okay.
That's really where it's coming from.
So you're doing the telemarketing survey, whatever. So that's just, that must be driving up the wall. Now, were you writing on the side still? Or
I'm writing on the side, and... And then things started to pick up. Someone optioned a screenplay for me for $100.
That's my first option. Yep. I got like $1,000 against like $80,000, and I was like, "Hey, I'm a paid writer."
I got $100, and it was great too, because like a complete idiot, I didn't even put a return address on.
So you never got the
envelope.
Check?
No, the guy found me by like calling up information and getting my name
and then contacting me
and saying, hey, idiot, you forgot to put a return address in a script. But by the way, we want to option it. You know?
You know what's amazing about that is, and these kids and they're crisscross records. They don't know. I mean, it's so much easier now. I mean, you know, to get stuff out. Like we had to physically mail it.
Yes.
Like you couldn't just email a pitch going, here's my idea. You had to send the whole thing.
Yep.
And now, even movies, I mean, back, you know, it was like, I had guys on. My friend Chris Mancini has done it. He has the Film Nerds podcast. He, remember back in Philly, he had to make a movie, and it was like an 8-minute movie. It cost him like $15,000.
Right.
Now, if you have $15,000, you can make a freaking Star Wars almost
through
digital. So, okay, so you option a screenplay for $100.
And then, so then I'm working the independent world, trying to meet, literally, at the lowest level of independent filmmaking. I mean, not hooking up with independent producers, but hooking up with dentists and doctors
and
widows and trust fund kids.
Who want to get into the business.
Oh, exactly. I want to make a movie, and, you know, let me give you some money to make a movie, which, of course, that money never comes. You know, every time you meet someone in independent filmmaking who's a dentist or doctor with money, it all comes down to that Jack Lemmon scene from Glengarry Glenn Ross when he's with the old couple.
Right.
He thinks he sold the house.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, they just like to screw with people. They just like, you know, they like to say they're going to give you money, but they don't. And that happened so many. I mean, I literally have had handshakes, looks in the eye, and celebratory dinners that people have paid for saying, we're going to make your movie.
And then
you don't hear from them. They disappear.
I wonder, in all honesty, why people do that. I mean, it's like, I could see if someone gave you money and you disappeared.
Right.
But I mean, I always wonder what goes into the human psyche that someone would sit there and be, are they just sadists? Like, oh, we want to get this guy all excited and say, screw you. I mean, it doesn't make sense.
I think it's the personal rush because for about 3 or 4 weeks when you're courting this person, you're treating them like gold and you're listening to their opinions about the script and they're sitting around thinking, I'm important. My
right.
money's making me important. These creative people are coming to me and talking to me and they want to hear my opinion and I'm giving notes on the script and talking about locations and
right.
this is awesome. I'm, you know, fun. And then, you know, at the second you got to pay for it, then that's okay. I've had enough fun. I don't actually pay for this fun.
And it's always funny that people who do that, they don't know crap about the business.
No,
they give notes and it's like, what? Like, I remember this one thing I was working on and the guy's like, well, what's the short bus? I go, the short bus. Ooh, I don't understand. It's a short bus. I mean, even when the guy's going to be a mascot, he's slow, but I don't understand. Well, people get that. Everyone knows what the damn short bus is. I'm like, why are you even in the room? And it was his story. It was his treatment that I built into a screenplay. But so you're jumping around the independent world. Now you had to be getting frustrated sometimes.
Totally. I mean, then out of nowhere, I made this bizarre plan for myself where I'm like, I'm going to get a screenplay made within 3 years of moving to LA, which anybody knows who moves out here is ridiculous.
Right.
3 years, it's ridiculous. But I got it done. 3 years, 2.5 years after I moved out, I sold a screenplay called Neon Signs.
Okay.
Which you can actually buy. It's on Netflix. It's on...
It's on Netflix?
It's on Netflix.
Can you stream it or do you have to rent it?
I'm sure you have to rent it. And it's not worth renting, so don't.
I stream it because I don't pay extra
so
money for the
renting.
I can't watch Killer Drag Queens on Dope, except someone actually gave me a copy of it. They bought me it. And I was like, wow, you're the two.
Exactly.
Exactly. More. Okay. So you do Neon Sign. Now did you wrote... Now, who produced that for you?
A friend of mine, Pipes Charles, got this guy named Colby to direct it and Colby to put up the money for it.
Okay, but you wrote it.
I wrote it.
Okay.
And they changed the ending to the film, which is what everyone loved about the movie, which I can't get too much detail, but they changed the ending. And then, basically, I was involved in some sort of Japanese version of The Producers, where this Japanese producer had come in, given us the money for the film, and then had absconded with the rest of the money. Said the film was going to cost $3 million to make.
Okay.
Gave us like $200,000, then left with the rest. And then before I knew it, the Yakuza was coming over. Like,
no, really?
Where's it? You know, we made a joke and called him the Yakuza.
But
the guy looked
like
a Yakuza.
Okay.
I'm not saying he was or wasn't, but he looked scary to me.
You know what's funny? You said that. I actually watched the show Hawaii Five-0 for the first time last night, and there was Yakuza, and I forgot because you forget about the Yakuza.
Yes, you do.
Because there's a great story. I don't know if you ever read the Dirt. The Motley Crue autobiography.
No.
Where like Vince Neil insulted the Yakuza in some bar in wherever,
right.
And he's drinking shots. And next thing you know, there's like four of them with Glocks like pointed at his head, and they're like, whoa, he's a rock star, we're sorry. And that's like, so they came and they came to get the money from you?
No. Well, they came to the offices we were working after the film was done, and they were like, where is this guy? They weren't threatening us. They knew
we're just
a bunch of goofy filmmakers. Anyway, long story short, this film disappears for 10 years, and it showed up on Netflix like 3 years ago out of nowhere. I don't know how it got there or whatever. But anyway, the point is, I actually got a film made in 3 years, even though I didn't make a dime off it, even though it bombed.
It's still you made a film. You can sit there and say, being like, oh yeah, I have a screenplay going, oh, I have this, I have this. No, actually, no, you actually had a film.
Right.
And see, that's cool. You know, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. Remember, people, this Friday, Cooper's Angels, 11:30 at the Yoohoo Room with special guest Kathy Lab, and I bring the hottest young female comics around in to do the show. It's right at the Yoohoo Room at Flappers. Fifth emailer at Cooper, 925KYHY.com. www.mattandrew.com. I'll give you two passes. And also, every Friday, listen to myself and entertainment lawyer John Foggerholm. Same station, 3 o'clock, Living in the Law. We're taking a break. We'll be back with Laz Sarek. Not Sakic, Sarek.
www.925kyhy.com and click the smartphone link.
Fairy residence, Tooth speaking. Sorry, there's no credit fairy here. What's that? He magically raises your credit score? Yeah, there's no credit fairy. But you can improve your credit by paying bills on time and keeping your credit card balances low. Money under your pillow? Sorry, kids only.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. Brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
For 10 years now, the Indie Bible has helped thousands of independent artists gain more exposure for their music. The 10th edition features 4,200 publications that will review independent music and 3,400 radio stations that will play independent songs. It also includes hundreds of labels, distributors, and digital download sites. Over 9,000 contacts in all. Included are 50 helpful articles written by music industry experts. The Indie Bible shows musicians where they can get their music reviewed, their songs played, and their CDs sold. For details and to order online, visit www.ndbible.com. From country to rock, hip-hop, reggae, rhythm, blues, alternative, metal, and jazz, we are independent music.
Independent music.
The Y.
The Y.
Welcome back to Cooper Talk. Welcome back to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. And remember, I'm only as hip as my guests. You have a great idea. Well, I told you the Mini Cooper idea.
Yes.
Isn't that good? Because I don't know, people, I watched this movie called The Best Movie Ever. The Best Movie Ever Sold.
Best Movie Ever Sold.
And he had 7 Mini Coopers. And I said, you know what? If anyone out there knows someone at Mini Cooper, have them Cooper 925KYHY.com. Because what we can do is, I would get those sheets on it. It'd be my face, Cooper Talk. He's only as hip as his guests. And I don't care. Hey, you give me a free car, I'll drive around with a beanie on my head that says Cooper Talk.
Okay, Mr. Steve, Mercedes Benz or Steve BMW.
Yeah. I just changed my last name to Mercedes. Welcome to Mercedes Talk.
At the end, it'll be Steve Kia.
Okay, so we're back with Laz. Now, okay, so you got this movie, Neon Signs. Neon Signs?
Yes.
Okay, not confused with Neon Lights or the car Neon. So you got that done, okay, and so all of a sudden you get this done. So now, this is how many years ago?
I'd say about 12, 14, something like that.
Okay, so then what's next? What do you look at?
What's next is like, it's like when you lose your virginity when you're 16 and you think the door is open.
Right.
I'm going to get laid all the time now, and then you don't get laid again until you're 20.
Sorry, I went to college. It was every other night. But and I look like Parker Stevenson back then. I had the tan, the blonde hair. Now look at me. I look like a mixture of John McEnroe and Patrick Michael Stewart. Okay, so you sat there and so you did this. You got Neon Signs.
I got the movie made, and then I'm back to doing nothing. You know, this back doing, you know, grunt
which
work.
Sucks because you just busted your ass. You have a movie made. That's the thing. So many people don't have anything made, and now you had a movie made, even though you weren't happy with it. But at the time, you must have been very proud of yourself.
And there were real actors in this movie, actors that I liked. I mean, granted, no, not even the D-list, but like William Smith was in this movie, who was like anybody who watches cult films.
Okay,
was William Smith?
Okay,
exploitation films. Carol Lindley from The Poseidon Adventure was in it.
If you said Audra Lindley from Three's Company, I'd be like, yeah, Mrs. Roper, babies. So how did you get these people? What did you?
We just sent the script out, and you know, we said who we want to cast for these people. Oh, I know this person. I can get to this person.
Okay.
There's a lot of that when you're making. I mean, jumping stories right now. We're trying to sell another film called Shots. It takes place in a bar, and
this is now.
No,
or
this
years
is
ago?
This is a year after Neon Signs.
Okay.
And this two of these stories happened within a year, back to back. But it just shows you about Hollywood, how nobody knows anything, how I don't know anything.
Yeah, because we're all just making up what the hell's going on. It's like we don't know what I mean. Like you know,
the first person is the first producer goes, hey, you know, what's the actress's name who won the Oscar for with the Clint Eastwood movie, the boxing movie? I'm zoning out now.
Hilary Swank.
Thank you very much. He goes, hey, you know, back then, hey, I know Hilary Swank. Who the hell is Hilary Swank?
Right.
She was in Karate Kid 3. To hell with her. 2 years later, she won the Oscar for Boys Don't Cry.
See that? You're going, what the hell, man? Shots. It could have been shots.
Right. A year after that, we're still trying to sell it. Same story again. Someone comes up to me and goes, hey, I can get Stanley Tucci to be in the movie, but he has some notes on your script. Who the hell is Stanley Tucci? And he's giving me notes on my script.
Right, right, right.
Forget him. Cut to, he wins an Oscar for best screenplay for Big Night.
Right.
You know, 2 years later.
Great movie.
So, exactly. Great movie. So, to anyone out there, don't, if anyone says, I can get someone from Porky's Five in your movie, take them.
You never know. Because that Kim Cattrall might blow up from Mannequin.
Exactly.
Look at her now. She's back doing Mannequin 8. Right. The deconstructive years. Her arm's falling off and she has a fake rack.
Right.
That's what she's doing. So you're trying, so what happened with shots? Did you get the shots
never,
made?
Never got it made. Never got it made.
Did you have the screenplay written and all that?
Yep. Everything was written, and I wrote it to all take place in a bar. I mean, I wrote it with money in mind, which is tough to do. I mean, first you write a screenplay, and you know when you're writing independent screenplays, no helicopters, no
bomb
blowing up. You know, you keep trying to keep it as mellow as possible. But for shots, I'm like, it's going to be the ultimate in mellow. It's going to be in one bar, you know, with four storylines over four decades, so I can get some actors in there for just 2 days. You know, I did everything with money in mind, just couldn't get it done. And then TV fell into my lap.
Okay, so after Shots, then what was the first TV show you worked on?
Again, Scott Fellows, who you know. Scott Fellows comes out here, and he's doing this thing called the Nickelodeon's Kids' Choice Awards, which is their big award show.
Oh, yeah.
And he got me to write on that show. It was my first paying job. It was $500 a week for 2 weeks' work. I was
thrilled
to get that money. And not only that, but I was working with and talking to Hollywood's biggest talent. Like, you know, I was talking to Jim Carrey and Whitney Houston.
And you're on set.
Yes,
You're not on an independent movie set. You're on an actual Nickelodeon, an award show, big production.
And not only that, but I'm working on live TV. Who works on live TV anymore?
Exactly.
And it's live. And it was amazing, you know. I'm just, you know, meeting. I mean, I met Chris Farley, you know, like 6 months before he passed.
Right.
His buddies with him, but it was fun to meet the guy. You know,
his brother was on the show. His brother's really nice. His brother looks exactly.
I know.
Like
Kevin. I've seen him in shows.
He came on here, and he's a really nice kid. Self-assuming. I'm a nice kid. He's our age, but it's cool. So you're meeting all these people. So you're doing this show.
Doing Kids' Choice, and here's the weird part: is like the Kids' Choice Awards is one time a year. And then there's a big help-a-thon, Nickelodeon. So I'm working on two shows a year for 2 weeks. So I'm working 4 weeks a year. And then the other 48 weeks, I'm washing cars.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that weird how that is?
You know what I mean?
It's like you're around the biggest stars. And then all of a sudden you're
going,
I got to sit there and I got to do telemarketing. Or I got to do, a Ponzi scheme.
I'm like, hey, pal, Chris Farley just laughed at my joke. Yeah, I'll get you more fries with that. But Chris Farley laughed at my joke, you know?
Yeah. You're good in the microphone. Yeah, I'll take no mayo on that Whopper Jr.
Exactly.
So you're doing that. Now you're busting your ass doing different jobs. So Fellows gets you this gig. And then what happens after that? So you must be getting frustrated because I'm sorry, it's like anything. Anyone who's in this business, and if people say they aren't, they're full of crap. We're all a little bit insecure. We're all a lot insecure.
Right.
And when you get that, and it's different because as you get older, it changes. Like me, you know, years ago, if I had this radio show, I'd be like, oh yeah, I got this great radio show, I got all these great guests. Yeah. But now I'm just blessed that I've got these guests. And now instead of the guests coming off going, that guy's a douche, I become friends with a lot of my guests
right.
who are people that when I was starting out in comedy were a class in front of me or were always on the TV show. And now so again, when I can call Wendy Liebman, send her text, hey Wendy, I need a guest for the show, or Steve Middleman or Jordan Brady directed I Am Comic, all these people, like 2 years ago I didn't know them. But if it was the same situation, if I did this 15 years ago, they probably would have been like, who's this guy?
Sure,
but now
sure.
I say I've had this guest, and so it works out. So you're sitting there, and you have to be going through crap. I mean, you must be feeling like crap. I mean, you just got off this, and you probably got a little cocky when you're around, because we all do.
Totally.
We all do, and you're like, yeah, even if it doesn't mean, you can write a free thing for Whitney Houston. You don't get like, hey, I wrote for Whitney Houston.
Right.
So you're doing that, and you're doing these crappy jobs. So then what's the next step?
And then everything starts rolling. I start working for this company called Evolution. They do a bunch of they got into this weird genre of television, which ran on the air for a couple of years. Where basically, they would repackage old shows. So they take like I Dream of Jeannie, Bewitched, The Jeffersons, right? And they would play that for half an hour. But in the half hour, we would do commercial parodies using footage from the show.
Okay.
You know, repurposing the footage. So, you know, you'd be watching Bewitched, and in the middle of Bewitched, there'd be a commercial for Hexedrin. Haha, get it?
Okay.
Hexedrin.
Okay.
So, and it's goofy stuff like that. And we also did it for the Three Stooges, and so I
That was with Frank, right?
Right. Started getting riding with that, yes, with the great Frank Baron. Started getting riding with that, and then, boom, Scott sold Ned's The Classified School Survival Guide. That was my first, like, I got that job because Nickelodeon liked me. I didn't have a spec script. They didn't interview me. Scott just said, "Hey, you remember Laz? Oh, yeah, we like Laz." And before I know it, I'm writing.
Now, were you on a story editor first, or story or writer, or how'd you go?
I came in as a grunt writer.
What is a grunt writer? Just a staff writer?
Yeah, just a staff writer.
Okay.
And there was a head writer, a great guy, Joe Fallon, who's the guy's won a Peabody, a bunch of Emmys, you know, but he just wasn't a fit for Scott and the show.
Because you need, you know, that's the whole thing. You need someone. If you're going to write, and that's the whole thing. It's like, I've written some spec scripts with my friend Neil Bobel, who people, you've heard me mention Neil Bobel many times. He'll be on the 18th, just so you know. Neil will be on in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. But we would, that was a thing. It's supposed to be fun. Like, we would just sit there and just crack up. But right. Then when it was, is this funny or not? Hey, you know what? This isn't right. But I think you need, I mean, for a writing staff, you really have to be on the same level.
You do, because at the end of the day, you got to realize something. You're not writing your show. You're writing the creator's show. And your job is to do the best job he can do.
Right.
You know, I've had so many times, you know, especially for Nickelodeon, I have these writers who I'm working with, and I'm like, dude, you're writing amazing All in the Family jokes, but this is Happy Days.
Right, right, exactly.
So it's not
exactly
working. You know, your jokes are funny, but it ain't the show. So, you know, and that was a lot of problems and stuff like that. So, second year of Ned's The Classified, Scott asked, like, everybody under the sun to be the head writer after he got rid of the first one. Everyone said, no.
Why? Because it's a lot more responsibility?
Busy or? With commitments. He didn't ask any from the staff. I'm talking outside our world. Busy with commitments, can't do it, blah, blah, blah. Finally, after asking everybody, his wife goes, "Why don't you ask Laz to be head writer?" So he does, and that's it. Then I'm off and running. Then
with Ned.
Yes.
And then that ran for four or five years?
It ran for 4 years, and it's weird. They killed the show after 65 episodes.
Well, someone told me a weird thing. That guy George told me, like, with Nickel, or was it you? I don't know. I haven't talked to you for a while. That Nickelodeon basically usually just orders those shows for so many episodes.
Yeah, they've changed their working modem, but that's how they used to be. They would run a show for 65 episodes. That was the magic number, and they'd kill it. No matter what the ratings were, it could be the highest rated show on Nickelodeon. They'd say 65 and we're done. Now they realize, like, iCarly has been running way longer than that. They're saying, hey, you know, like a normal world, in a sitcom world, you got to hit show, let it run.
Right.
So they killed Ned's after 65, but the funny thing is, like, it didn't do anything for 2 years, and they started rerunning it on Teen Nick. As last I heard, it was the number two show on Teen Nick, reruns of this.
Well, it's funny, because I watched it once, because I remember, I don't know, a few years ago, you had said, oh, we might need someone to write a story idea,
right.
But that just was going off, and I also gave you my headshot, because we might need a principal, but then the show got canceled.
Right.
But it's just, but that's why I watched it at the time, but, I mean, as I said, it's... That's what people don't get. Like, when they say it's a kid's show, it's professional creative writers writing this, and that's why kids get it. Because a lot of times, some of these shows, the parents watch it. I mean, look at the Flintstones. You know, that was a cartoon, but that was written for adults. The Simpsons, for adults. Kids may watch the Simpsons.
Right.
A lot. They're not going to get a lot of references. But this is, it's professional writing. So you're doing Ned the Classified, and you're the head writer.
Right.
And now you're sitting there and you're digging it. And now, how long did you work a year? Was it, it's like, how many episodes did you shoot a year?
It would range. I would say probably about 20 a year or something like that.
So that you're working for about 30 weeks, 32 weeks?
Yeah, something like that. And that was my first time working on a lot.
Okay.
We worked at the Sunset Gower Studios.
They shot over here, not in Burbank.
Yeah, they shot Batman there, the monkeys. I'm running around like, this is
Keenan and Kel.
Amazing. Yes. The great Keenan and Kel, yes. But it was amazing.
Yeah, so you pull in the lot. Yeah, and then...
And plus, too, I just got to say, right outside my office window, I forget the name of the show, but it was a Dick Clark show about Philadelphia in the early 60s. It ran a couple years ago, ran for like a year. I don't know what the name of the show is. But anyway, IMDb, whatever the hell it is. But anyway, my point is, when I looked outside my window, it was 1962 Philadelphia.
See, that is so cool.
Like, because they would leave the setup all the time. So there'd be stores, and I would go out there and have some butts sometimes and pretend.
That's funny.
I'm hanging out in downtown Philly.
That's funny, because, yeah, that'd be cool. So you're doing Ned, and then I guess you knew, I mean, when you're working on it, you knew that the end, it was imminent. It was it was going to happen after so many episodes. Yeah. And even if it's 2 years from now, you still get a little, I mean, we all get antsy that guy, like, oh my God, what am I going to do 2 years now? It's like, well, why are you worried? And you sit there in retrospect and you look back. Now, so you're writing for Ned. Now, when did you get the idea for Killer Drag Queens?
All right, so Ned ends, and to go on, you know, you're talking about this business, this industry, and the thing that drives me crazy about this industry and drives crazy most people I know is that I never expected to be an overnight success. I'm still not where I want to be, but I did expect to be a steady progression uphill, you know, up the mountain.
Right.
What I didn't expect was up and down and up and down. So I come out of Ned's, and I'm thinking everyone at Nickelodeon's going to be calling me up. Hey, we got a new show.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody calls me. I'm dead to the world.
Well, you know what? We know people forget, too, I think, also, is, you know, you're one of Scott Fellow's buddies.
Yes, yes.
Everyone has their buddies. It's like the old thing. It's like, I mean, it's like anything in life. You have your cliques, and it sounds awful, but basically a group of writers or a group of, there's comedy cliques. You know,
totally.
I sit there. I don't go with the cliques because it's like a lot of the younger cliques, I don't need to. If I'm not going to do a free gig somewhere, I really don't give a crap. But then the people I know, I'm like, hey, man, you know, can you, you know, if you ever need an opener, boom, you know. So, but that's with the writers. I'm sure their show, everyone knows that the show is going to get canceled in 65 episodes back then.
Right.
So then they're probably sitting there going, okay, well, I got my boy here. I got this guy. So you got no calls from after
Ned. No calls. And I'm sitting there, and, you know, it's so easy to do in this town and in any kind of creative field where you come out here to do one thing. I come out here to make movies.
Right.
But then you fall into this nine to five assembly line type of job where you're working on this TV show, and you might be having a great time in that TV show, but it's not what you came out there to do. So after no one's calling me, I'm like, you know, I'm going to make a movie. Why am I making a movie? You know? And back in those days, before the credit crunch, I had good credit. My credit card had $25,000 on it I could take out. And I'm sitting there my whole life. I'm like, am I going to be waiting my whole life for some dentist to give me money to make a movie?
Right.
I'm like, to hell with that. I'm going to make a movie. I want to do something fun, something a little goofy, something in a Russ Meyers kind of vein.
Right.
So I said, I'm doing a movie. I banged out the script literally in 2 weeks. I wrote it in 1 week.
Now, where did you get the idea? Did you have a fascination with drag queens? Is there something you got to tell the listeners? Do you like the drag queens? Do you want to go to Hawaii and cruise the strips? Do you like little Filipino boys who wear big Afro wigs? Do you got to say something to us last? You can say it now. You write kids' TV show, but you like transvestites. Now, what was it?
Just FYI, he's not that great investigative. I mean, I'm wearing a dress right now, so it's not like on top of fire.
Exactly. So because it's a very bizarre script.
Yes.
And so how did you was it something that you had did you have Alexis in mind when you wrote the script, or you just weren't sure?
I just at that time by luck I was getting into Russ Meyer films. I'm watching Faster Pussycat Kill Kill,
okay,
and, you know, Lorna Doone, all these movies, you know, Super Ultra Vixens, you know. And that's when I started saying I want to make a movie. And literally, however it works, the title that popped in my head, Killer Drag Queens on Dope.
Okay.
Where it came from. And once I got that title, the script wrote itself.
Okay,
The whole movie popped into my head in a visual, you know, scene. So
Okay. So then you started writing it. So then what's the next process? You have it written.
The next process, I have it written, then it's time to cast. And this is going back to, you know, me sending out a script without a return address, which I love this about anyone who's trying to make a movie out there. Try anything you can, and by that I mean this. So I'm doing the movie, and I see in Star Magazine is Alexis Arquette in drag.
All right,
and she looks amazing.
Yeah,
amazing. That's exactly who I want to be in my film. That's the star I want for my movie. So I'm going on the internet, looking at agencies. Where can I find Alexis Arquette? Where can I find Alexis Arquette? No one's representing her at that time. No one knows. I'm doing all this internet research. After 2 weeks of internet research, I'm like, all of a sudden I just look up and I'm like, call up information, 411. Do you have the phone number for Alexis Arquette in Los Angeles? Boom. Got the phone number.
Okay.
Called her up, and that was it. Got her the script.
You know what's funny about that? Very funny. I don't think I ever told you this story. Before we shot that, I was freelance copywriting for writing like 30 jokes a day for a company called Skliff.com. And the one guy, the one partner, was like this young guy who made a ton of money off. There's only three of us that worked in the office. He made all this money off the internet. So we went to a party. It was Taylor Hawkins, the drummer. Because one guy who worked at the site, his wife at the time, sister, was going out with Taylor. So we took a limo to Dominic's in West Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
And we went to the party. And The other drag queen was our waiter for that movie because he sat there. Whatever, I forget his name. Coco.
Omar.
And Omar, I remember because
it was Omar Alexis.
Well, because I remember he was our waiter, and John was the young guy. And it was John kept ordering bottles of Cristal, and he poured it a little too fast, and it foamed up, and he felt bad. He goes, "Oh my god," to John. This guy John, he goes, "Oh my god, I just wasted you know, whatever money." And John goes, "Screw it," and throws the rest of it over his shoulder, not to make the guy feel bad.
Right.
So years later, in a scene where I'm feeling him up, I'm like, "This guy was my waiter years ago."
Yep.
So you get Alexis.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you have your star, but not you were going to finance it on your own.
Yep. The whole thing I was going to do on my credit card. I have one great friend, Jim Kalinowski, who gave me $3,000 cash, okay, which was real solid.
But there's some lady on the set, though. Wasn't she a producer?
She was this weird woman that got thrust upon me by the stunt coordinator, who was also... There was a lot of producers.
The stunt coordinator was a jerk.
They didn't give me any money, but they were there to help me.
The makeup
something.
Guy was nice.
Yes, the makeup
and
the, guy was
the,
great.
And the young black girl with the short hair, I forget what she did. She was like the AD, or she was really sweet.
Yes.
And but yeah, the stunt coordinator was a jerk.
Yeah, he was you know, ex-Israeli army. I think ex Assad. I mean,
he was
always into this like weird karate stuff where he could do. He's always like, "I could break your neck with two fingers," kind of guy.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Why would you say that?
Exactly.
Hey, I can bitch slap you with one flick of a coin.
Exactly.
You'll fall over. So you have the money, and your friend gave you money. So now you have this idea for this movie. You have your script.
Right.
You have your money. You have Arquette set up.
Yep.
Now, how did you find like? You knew Clark, so you're going to give Clark a part.
I did casting. I figured out everything by myself. I never went to film school, so I go to that, you know, those backstage papers that actors look at, put ads in, had the auditions at my brother's apartment, like you said earlier, found the cast, did all the location scouting myself, you know, shot in the streets with no permits. We shot at the hotel on Sunset, the one where Zephyr used to stay all the time.
Right, that's opening scene. Yeah.
Snuck into there with the film equipment. Just shot it, got it done, and that was it.
Okay, hold the thought. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, talk more about this, because it's very funny. I have to tell you a story about the movie. It's very funny, though. But just remember, Cooper, 925KYHY.com. Cooper's Angels, this Friday night, 11:30, You Who Remember Flappers, $5 to get in, happy hour throughout the show, the wonderful Kathy Lavin's on, also some very funny comics, Ali Breen, Jackie Gold, Christian Sherm. I have 7 or 8 great comics, I host it, and the fifth emailer at Cooper at 925KYHY.com, if you're local, because I'm not going to fly you in, which also, I heard we're getting listed to in like 20 countries now, so thank you. I don't know how you people understand me, because I talk too fast, but I want to thank you for listening. We'll be back with Laz Sarek. Laz Sarek. This is Cooper Talk, and I'm only as hip as my guests.
Deals on apparel? Visit OnlineSalesMart.com. Currently, we have authentic Armani designer sunglasses at $100 or more off original price. Novelty neckties of all types for under $10. Necktie sets at discounted prices. And high-quality and genuine leather dress shoes, wallets, handbags, briefcases, and more for less. Visit www.OnlineSalesMart.com. All major credit cards are accepted and all orders are shipped on the double. Once again, that's OnlineSalesMart.com.
Need to restore your credit? Don't know where to go or who to trust? Let United Credit Education Services assist you in restoring your credit. Now, why choose them? They are members of the Better Business Bureau with no complaints. They offer a written, yes, a written money-back guarantee. They have assisted their customers in having over 300,000 negative items deleted from their credit profiles. Late payments, repossessions, tax liens, public records, student loans, foreclosures, judgments, child support, and collections. Their staff has over 20 years of experience in credit restoration. So call now and get the process going and get in that credit score you deserve. Call for that free consultation at 310-864-6258. That's 310-864-6258. Or you can reach them at 310-713-8653. That's 310-713-8653. And the first 50 callers to mention they heard this ad on What's Hot Radio gets $100 off of their services. It's United Credit Education Services. Check them out. Use them. I use them. They helped me, and they can help you. Check them out.
You know those shows that play the same boring pop songs over and over again every 15 minutes? This ain't that show. Billboard bands, sellout musicians, and phony boy bands need not apply. Independent music is played here. It's Cooper Talk, baby.
Welcome back to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. I always crack up. It's Cooper Talk, baby. I got to change my, they call it imaging, but I know nothing about the radio. So I got to change my, you got to change my imaging because Cooper Talk, baby. It's like, God, I feel like I should be like, hey, play the cymbal. I got my guest Laz here. Hey, Laz. Laz is on the banjo. Okay, so back to Killer Drag Queens, which I just got to tell you this real quick. It was so funny because we shot that. And there's two things I remember about it. One was, we're meeting the thugs in the shower. And I had to go whoa 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 whoa, and I was doing it to Deep Purple or something like that. You're like, you can't do that; it will cost me so much money. I remember that, and I remember when it came out, it was so funny because I never knew it came out. We went to the party, and then all of a sudden, my friend Amy, hey Amy, how you doing? She was living in Chicago now; she's in Delaware. Hope all is well, Amy. She said, Cooper, I just found on Netflix or whatever or somewhere. I'm like, what? And I was at a Blockbuster in Glendale with my old girlfriend, and we're walking through, and on the shelves I see the movie. I'm like, oh my God, oh, someone recognized me, I'm in that movie. Hey, are they renting that a lot? I'm in that movie. So okay, so you get Alexis,
right? I get Alexis, and that's it, make the movie. And I gotta say two things I'm proud of that movie. Number one, when I read a bunch of reviews online, what I love about it is half the people love the movie, think it's amazing. The other half think it's the worst piece of crap they've ever seen.
Okay.
I love it when some
well,
guy
that's,
wrote...
That's cult stuff. It's going to be like that.
I love it. I love some guy wrote, I made better films in my backyard when I was 9.
That's great. I was reading some of them last night. Awesome. They're like, there was like awesome. One star. And I'm like, oh, great. And I'm looking, I'm like, well, at least they didn't make fun of me.
But yeah, it got reviewed on some internet movie review shows, you know?
Well, it was on like one of the worst week ever, like website. Like they said, glitchy movies. I remember a while ago. Right. But it's okay. So you got that was finished. That was in the can. And so now then... Where do you go next? You're done that. You're looking for a gig.
Next, and then I'm just sitting around, jumping from, you know, cartoon work. I started working on Curious George, of all things, which is such a weird juxtaposition, going from Killer Drag Queens on Dope to
and that was
George
on
PBS.
Okay.
And
I always thought Dexter looks like a mixture of Curious George and Mark Wahlberg.
Yes.
He does a little bit, I think. So you're on. Oh, so you're writing that, which is, I mean... Curious George doesn't talk. What are you writing? Just a story, or
it's weird. You the word they use is chitter. That's monkey talk for chitter. So you'd be like, you know, so George does talk, but he can't say human words. So you'd be like, you know, what the hell, chitter? Like, you know, like I'm mad, chitter, or like give me back that chitter. You know,
oh,
what
that's
I mean?
Funny. See, right on there, and you must be getting like, I'm tired of writing chitter. What the hell is this chitter? So, but it's a gig.
You know, it's a gig, and I gotta say something else too. It depends where you are in your life. You know, if you're writing this stuff, like I'm writing Curious George, I'm writing Johnny Test, I'm writing Big Time Rush. If I was 25, I'd be like, oh, I'm writing this kid stuff and forget about it. But I got kids. You know, I got a 13-year-old and a 10-year-old and their friends. I'm like a god to them, you know, because I'm working on these shows.
Right.
I can't tell you how many mothers have come up to me and go,
oh,
my kids watch Curious George all the time. They love that show. It makes you feel good.
Oh, yeah, it's because it's your writing.
It makes you feel good, you know?
They go, well, we don't like the writing. We just like the monkey. Well, thanks a lot, lady. Right. Get out of here.
And I tell you the best, I'm in New York City about a year ago, and I'm at my buddy's house, and he's buying something, you know, some whatever, illegal stuff, which I had no part of, but I happened to be there at the time. And so the guy who's come over was selling him this stuff, and my buddy starts bragging, goes, oh, yeah, my friend writes for Curious George. And the guy's like, really, man? You write for Curious George? I watch that with my son all the time. He goes, you know what's my favorite episode, man? The one when he's on the roller skates, man. And I'm like, I wrote that one. No way.
Man, the dealer knows.
No way, man. I smoked before that, and I laughed my ass off when that little monkey roller skates.
Oh.
I can't believe you wrote that. And threw my buddy some extra stuff. He goes, here, man, take some extra. I love this guy.
Oh, man, that is funny.
I'm like, yeah, the dealer watches Curious George with his son and knows me. And named the episode that I wrote.
That is so funny.
And I just want to... I'm just rambling, but the other trippy thing is too, which I didn't know at the time, they had taken Curious George cartoons and made them into children's books. So I'm literally lying in bed one morning, like I said, I got kids. I'm lying in bed one morning and I wake up and there's a book like under the covers next to me where my kid had just been hanging out unbeknownst to me. And I'm looking at the cover of the book, I'm like half asleep, I'm like, oh, it's Curious George. And I'm like, wait a minute, this looks familiar, man. He's on roller skates.
I'm right.
And I flip open the book. It's my cartoon. They made it to the book, and it says written by Lazarus Sarah.
Oh, it says it.
Yeah, it says written by Lazarus
Sarah. You get a little cash off that?
Nothing.
You didn't get it. No. You're in print. They make a book. You get no check. Nothing. That's bullcrap.
Not only that, but they hired a writer to write that, to take my script and take it to break it down into 12 sentences. I could have done that myself.
Yeah, really.
The money. But yeah, it says you know, it says written by blank and based on the cartoon idea by Lazarus Sarek. But there's my name.
But still, you've published a book now.
In the book, and
but you have a book. A lot of people try to write books and
I got
sold.
Yeah, so and the other thing is, like I said, it's you're more of a rock star when you have kids. But one of my Curious George books, another one, was at my kids' book sale. Everybody flipped out.
That's cool, though.
An author in the room now. Like,
right.
I have my kids' books, so buy books. And all of a sudden, my son's like, hey, my dad wrote this book.
You exactly.
I'm like, shh. Yeah. You know, they're like, oh.
So you leave Curious George. And now, how did you end up on Big Time Rush?
You know, again, it's who you know. I mean, I owe so much food on my table to Scott Fellows. You know, he got me my first writing job at Nickelodeon for the Kids' Choice Awards. Then he does Ned's the Classified. And then, you know, he's trying to do his own thing, too. Then boom, Big Time Rush hits, picks up the phone, calls me up, and I'm back.
Okay.
Back making money.
So now that's I don't watch it. I'm, why would I watch it?
Right.
I'd be sort of creepy if I watched it. But this girl I know back east, her nephew, it's her favorite show. Because when I texted her the other day, I said, oh, I found my guest, because I always freak out. Because I sometimes, New Year's it was easy. Which, by the way, people, this next hour, I'll be playing Best of Cooper Talk because I need to go to an audition. Just so you know, listen to it. I think I'm going to play the Rich Scheidner episode. I got to see what's on the computer here. But I texted her and I was like, well, and I said, Big Time Rush. And she's like, oh my God. I said, the guy who did Killer Drag Queens, he now works on a show called Big Time Rush. And she's like, oh my God, it's my nephew's favorite show. So it's just, you know, for me it's weird is because it's about a boy band, but it's hitting a market of young boys, I guess, because they're envious because, like, these guys are on stage and the girls probably all love them and they probably dress cool. I mean,
well, that's the thing about the show and what we try to do. I mean, it's such girl candy. I mean, they're four hunky looking guys.
Right, right.
They sing really well. I mean, it's funny. I mean, they don't sing with auto tune. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen them sing a cappella, instruments. They sound great. They really are. But we throw in as much boy humor as possible. Farts, fake vomit, running through windows, monkeys on skateboards, you know, and that, so the boys watch it and be like, hey, these are
monkeys on skateboards? What's with you monkeys on skateboards? You know what? Okay, do me a favor. Here's what I want from you, all right? And people, email me, cooper925kyhy.com if you want this too. I want you to do something with a monkey on a Segway. A monkey on one of those Segways. I want to see that. Can you do that? Monkeys on skateboards, monkeys Segway, like sitting there rolling through Burbank.
Well, I'm working up to pitching my next script idea.
There you go. Monkeys on Segways. By the way, I have a great show. It's like a cop show, but they're all monkeys and they're on Segways. That's what we're doing. So you're mixing it so the guys will like it.
Yes, exactly.
And then the guys, if it's written for guys, but the chicks are digging it, the guys will like it even more.
The girls are automatically going to like it. The music is, you know, it's if you're into that type of pop music, it's very good. And the boys look good, so girls are immediately going to like it no matter what. As long as they show up and smile, you're fine. But then you, to make sure it doesn't skew too girl heavy, like I said, you throw in all the potty humor and all the goofy stuff, and that's it.
See, that's cool. So now that's a live, that's shot in front of a live audience? Or
No, it's single camera. And a lot of, I hear a lot of Nickelodeon, Disney's moving away from single camera, going into that, you know, the three camera total sitcom setup.
Right.
But no, this is single camera. Ned's with single camera. It's a funner way to tell story. When you do single camera, it's not, when you do three camera, it's very set up punchline.
Right.
You do single camera, you kind of let it breathe a little bit. And
so your title on this is what?
Is co-executive producer.
Okay, so now what is the difference between a co-executive producer and like a staff writer? Is it, do you guys oversee it more? You're more management? Is that what it is?
Well, I was head writer. And basically, all the producer credits is when you ask for more money and they say no.
Okay.
But we're going to give you a cooler sounding credit.
Okay.
And you're like, all right, I'll take the cooler sounding credit. And that's what it is. I was head writer on that show when I started. I think my first title was just producer or something. Now I'm co-executive producer. It's all crap. So I'm still doing the same job I was when I first started.
So did you guys go, what's your day like? So you shoot on, let's say, a Friday or whatever you shoot. Is it a week process, rehearsal, writing? What?
No, I mean, you're thinking sitcom. We shoot, especially when it's single action, you shoot three cameras, you can bang out the show in a day like they do in a sitcom. When you shoot single camera, It takes 5 days to shoot that one show.
Okay.
So they're shooting nonstop. And I'm basically in the writer's room. You know, Scott comes in and says, I want to do a story about this. And then I go to the writer's room, work with the writers, and try and give him what he wants. You know, try and come up with my ideas to best suit his, and just kind of gear all the writers up. That works, that doesn't work, blah,
okay.
blah, and that's it.
And then you sit down, you guys get, you right. go through the script. Now, how far in advance do you write the script before it gets shot?
Well, see, that's I mean, in a perfect world, you get a bunch of weeks, and you know, you get 2 weeks for a first draft, 2 weeks for this, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is, towards the end of the show, because Scott was so crazed doing everything, we were literally, we would come up with the idea for a show on Monday. We would do a first draft. We come up with the show for the idea for, I'm sorry, for the Friday, have the first draft done by the next Monday. Then all that week, rewrite, and the next Monday they start shooting.
Okay.
So literally, you know, including the weekend, which we worked the weekend, it would be, I would say, in the last 10 episodes we did of last season, 8 days before we shot that show, we started writing that show.
Okay, and then they sit there. So why all the rewrites? Just to fine-tune it? Or because, I mean, you probably have a point. I mean, it's a 22-minute
quiz. Yes, yes.
So how much of that is singing?
Not that much.
Okay, I mean,
it's funny. No, when they put a song in, it's a minute 50. That's
okay,
it.
So it's really okay. So it's really
that,
short.
It's not that
it's
long.
Like when the Brady Bunch did his time.
Exactly.
The change.
Yeah.
You got to rearrange.
Exactly.
And then Greg Brady leaves because he's Johnny Bravo or Johnny Sacco.
Yes.
He's like, I can't, man. I got to stay with the band. I don't want to be Johnny Sacco. Well, we can replace you because you're just a voice, and all we need is a guy that looks like you that can fit in a suit. So and that was
cynical,
so,
Steve. You thought that was touching drama when you
I did. I was like, oh my
come
God.
On, Johnny, Greg, please come
on,
back.
Greg, come on, Sacco. Johnny Sacco, man, that Greg Brady. So you get on the, so you sit there, and then there's rewrites.
Yeah.
Now, how long is a day for you? I mean, are you in there for 12? I mean, how do you know when the day's over? Is there like, is it like you go in at a certain time and you know the day's over at that time? Or?
We have pretty normal hours, like 9 to 6, 10 to 6, 10 to 7, but 2 days a week, we work till midnight or 1.
Starting at 10?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And you basically keep writing until you're ready to pass out. I mean, that's literally, I mean, until, you know, Scott puts his head down and goes, okay, I can't work anymore.
See, that's weird. That's like, you know T'Shawn Shannon?
No.
He's, he's written for Leno. He wrote for Saturday Night Live for years. He writes for Nick Swartz. And he's really great writer. I knew him from doing comedy. He was saying back when he wrote for Saturday Night Live, and he used to do a lot of Tracy Morgan sketches, he would go in at like 12 in the afternoon, and you would leave at like 8 in the morning. They would just write
right.
all night. That's also a fast turnaround.
Yes,
that's
yes.
live. But so what's next, man? Are you doing any working on any movies? We have about 3 minutes left. So do you have any? Are you just concentrating on this? Because you're probably gonna go to break soon, right?
Yeah. We're coming back. We're coming.
Okay.
I was on break, coming back to Big Time Rush, starting on next Monday, the 9th.
Okay.
And believe it or not, looking for the next independent film to do something a lot mellower than Killer Drag Queens on Dope.
Are you going to write it?
I want to write and direct it,
okay.
and just finance it. I'm looking for something in the Company of Men, that kind of genre.
Okay,
that
all right.
Kind of, you know what I mean? So, and I'm also pitching shows right now.
Any good ideas?
I think they're good ideas. But
of course, that's any good ideas. No, Cooper, they suck. That's why I'm pitching them, because they're the crappiest shows you'll ever see in your life.
But we'll see if anybody else could. I got to tell you, not to kiss ass, but great job. This is the first time I'm hearing the show. First time I'm on the show. It's a great job, Steve.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, man.
Also, I so wish the show was around. We were actually putting the movie out there. I mean, that this promotion for this movie that's now like 5 years old and nobody gives a damn about
it
anymore.
People go on it. You can see Steve Cooper get beat up by a drag queen, shot. I feel up a drag queen. I have bruises on my face. You can see a whole, I have hair in it. I couldn't wear my glasses because Mark Belsman had more credits and I had to shave my goatee. So Belsman got to keep his glasses and his goatee. I had to take everything off and have these big bushy sideburns. And before we're going to go to about a little over a minute. I just got to tell. I remember me and you went to Kmart buying the wardrobe, and we went through. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And I still. Do you still have that members only jacket?
Yes.
I want that. I want that damn members only. I wore this member. I always wanted. You wouldn't give it to me. I'm so pissed. I'm like, man. Like you're not gonna wear it. Look at you're all.
I'm gonna sell this on eBay when this movie.
Yeah,
is a
exactly.
monster hit and make a ton of money.
Watch when Cooper Talk becomes a huge. Hit. I'm syndicated in 400 markets, and all of a sudden I see on eBay Cooper Talk. Before he was Cooper Talk. Before he was Cooper. He was Tony. Anyway, Laz, I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much.
It was great having you on. And remember, you can get me that Big Time Rush autograph
yes,
stuff.
Yes, I will.
Get
yes,
me
I
some
will.
Merch. If you can get some merch, get me some merch. I know it's hard to get the merch, but I'm all about the merch.
The swag is on the way.
The swag is on the way. And people, remember, the next hour is going to be Best of Cooper Talk. I got to figure out which one I'm going to put on. But hang out and listen. And I want to thank you, all you people. It's 2012 is going to be a great, great year. I'm going to try to get great guests. Next week, I should have Steve Middleman, who's been on before, and Steve Scroven, who was a writer for Seinfeld and executive producer for Everybody Loves Raymond. Anyway, hit me at email, cooper925kyhy.com. Come out this Friday to Flappers, 11:30, Cooper's Angels. Fifth emailer from the Burbank area gets 2 free tickets. And I just want to thank you. Have a happy, happy 2012. Be safe. And remember, I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guests. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend.